Now, from the left coast, another in-depth interview from Peter B. Collins. Peter B.'s been talking about news and politics since Watergate and generously shares his knowledge, wisdom, opinions, and outrage here because his friends and family can't take it anymore. Peter B.'s an independent progressive who upsets Democrats and Republicans as conditions require and is one of the few lefty pundits who predicted Trump would win. This podcast is funded entirely by listeners like you, and subscribers get first access to these in-depth interviews. When you're ready, go to peterbcollins.com/signup. Now, here's your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast here at peterbcollins.com. The title of the book is How Trump Stole 2020. Greg Palast, who writes for The Guardian and Rolling Stone, has a powerful new book out. It's a follow-up to The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
Presidential elections are planned distractions to divert attention from the action behind the scenes. Like a game of chess when the house is a mess, or a petty money squabble when your marriage is in trouble, or a football game when there's rioting in the streets.
We roll out $10 every 4 years, and it becomes more prophetic over time.
Another song.
Greg Palast is the award-winning journalist, and his new book is on the New York Times bestseller list, How Trump Stole 2020. And he joins us today for a lengthy discussion of the election rigging and voter suppression that Trump is hoping will carry him to a second term. Greg, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be with you again, Peter.
And I have to say that I've been reading your book over the past week, and one of my activist listeners and a subscriber to this podcast who lives all the way out in Maine on the other coast, Dick Attlee, has been listening to your book. Well, it's not on tape anymore, but the audio book. And I feel like reading your book, I've been hearing your voice for a week. You really capture your tone and your attitude in your writing, and it makes it enjoyable, I have to say.
Well, I know the decay of American democracy is entertaining, and that's why I try. I mean, here's the thing: is that I make it entertaining for a reason. I don't want people crying through 300 pages. That's why I put a comic book by Ted Rall in the middle, 48 pages of comics.
Yeah,
because it is. I don't make fun of the victims. I'm going after these little weasels who are shoplifting the vote. You know, and so you have, and by the way, I do want to emphasize to people how Trump stole 2020 is not a prediction. It's a fact of what happened so far, but we can steal it back. So let's not tear our hair out here. I mean, I can't. I'm bald. For those who, you know, most people recognize me with my fedora on, but there's a reason I wear it.
Mm-hmm.
nothing beneath to protect me.
I have the same hairline, and we have COVID bozo hair, and it makes us more attractive than ever.
It throws them off. So we do try to make it entertaining, and we do have the audio book is not out yet. We gave it away to a few people, but the important thing is, it's about the, you know, for 20 years now, you and I have been talking for almost 20 years about vote rustling.
Yeah.
Isn't it time after 20 years to let the American people choose the president instead of the grifters, the ballot bandits?
Well, let's go straight to the scene of the crime in Georgia. And to its partial credit, the New York Times, in a front page lengthy story on July 26th, wrote about the anatomy of an election meltdown in Georgia. And we saw a COVID primary with incredibly long lines, fewer polling places. And so the Republicans are quite adaptive in their voter suppression tactics, and they roll out the ones that fit the moment. And if the primary in Georgia is any predictor, then the title of your book, unfortunately, is likely to be, carved in stone.
Well, look, I call it How Trump Stole 2020. Think of it as a final warning. Here's what happened, by the way, in Georgia. And one of the reasons that they had the information they're working with, as I am, with Latosha Brown of Black Voters Matter, who actually helped launch my book this week with Amy Goodman and Noam Chomsky, or last week. So the thing is that why were people in lines in Georgia? Well, if you read the book, you'd actually know, because I have a special chapter called Mail-In Madness, the dangers in mail-in voting. I'm not talking Trump dangers. I'm not talking, bloviating bigot Ornstein commander-in-chief saying that they're going to be mailing ballots from Bolivia and the Ukraine or whatever. No. That doesn't happen. We've had mail-in voting for 100 years, and we've seen 12 cases of impersonation fraud over several billion ballots cast. I mean, it's and you go to jail. So we don't have that. But what we do have is the voters who get defrauded. It's not the voters who are fraudulent. It's the voters who get defrauded. The reason you had giant lines in Georgia is that people didn't get their ballots. So in other words, when we talk about mail-in balloting, it works in places like Oregon. It works in a general election in California because everyone gets a ballot automatically. If you're a voter, you get a ballot automatically through the mail. In Georgia, you have to apply for it. You have to have a reason for it. And guess what? They just don't send it to you. That's one way to suppress the vote, is by just not sending you a ballot. So, for example, are these just unsophisticated people that don't know what they're doing? I'm sorry. One guy that lost his ballot, Jerry Thomas, in Georgia. This is in the June 9 primary. And this is important, guys, because this is their test run for November.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Thomas, his wife applied for him and his ballot 45 days before the election, a month and a half. So he got his ballot on June 10 for the June 9 primary. What did that mean? It meant he had to stand in line for 4 hours in the humid rain and then cast not a ballot, but they would shunt him to a provisional ballot, which 40% chance that won't even be counted because you've already gotten your ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Mail.
And Greg,
I just want to tell, yeah, go ahead.
Stacey Abrams, who had the gubernatorial election stolen from her by the then Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, she applied for a mail-in ballot. She received it, but the return envelope was already sealed when she got it.
That happens. That's really important for people to understand. Okay, Stacey Abrams is head of Fair Fight Georgia. She's a Yale law graduate. She knows voting rights law inside out. So she almost lost her mail-in vote because in the Georgia humidity, thousands apparently of envelopes simply sealed shut. That is the inside envelopes you need to return your vote. Now here's the problem. She's a Yale law graduate and a voting rights expert. She knew she had to literally wait in line, take a chance on getting the virus, to get a new envelope. Others would simply rip open the envelope and say, okay, I'll tape it back together, or I'll send in my own envelope with my ballot. You've just thrown your ballot in the garbage. They know, so they create all these obstacle courses to getting in your mail-in ballot. Mm-hmm. It's not that the voters are committing fraud. They're being defrauded by the elections officials. And by the way, Jerry Thomas, the guy who got his ballot one day late, his wife who asked for his ballot, that's Andrea Young, who is a Harvard Law graduate and head of the ACLU of Georgia. So you think she doesn't know how to apply for a ballot?
Yeah.
So this is the problem. This is what they're doing to people not by the thousands, but by the millions. According to MIT, 22%, that's one in five ballots, is never counted. Half of those because the voter didn't get their ballot at all or in time. And so they are stealing away the ballots. And if it were – look, Peter, if it were random, it wouldn't matter. It's not random. If you're African American, the chance that you won't get your ballot in the mail is about 2.5 times the probability of a white voter not getting their ballot. These are the games that are being played. And about 1 in 10 mail-in ballots is once sent in is rejected for everything from postage due – to some some GOP animal with a BlackBerry disqualifying your signature, saying, oh, they had a middle initial when they registered to vote, and they left off their middle initial throughout their vote.
Well, and Greg, this whole signature thing is an issue that I have real concerns about. And as you noted, many mail-in ballots are rejected in the California primary. 100,000 were deemed invalid, and at least 27% of those, we're told, were because of issues related to the signature. And I know an actual graphologist. Her name is Ann Mahoney. She does courtroom testimony about signatures and handwriting. And I also know that most of the people who work in the voting offices across California and the country have zero experience in graphology. And so while I have learned from Ray Lutz's online conversation, I posted some of my concerns there, and Mimi Kennedy responded and said, well, you know, they do have access to more of our signatures. When we sign that gizmo that the UPS driver brings, apparently the registrar of voters can get a hold of those signatures.
I think it's really simple, Peter. If someone has forged, what they're really saying is that it's a forged ballot.
Yeah.
Let's not play games here. They knocked off 600,000 people, 600,000 ballots in 2016, 600,000 ballots, over 500,000, on a challenge to signature. Now, you're challenging a signature because you're saying the voter didn't sign it, someone else did. Well, you're telling me, they're telling us, when they knock out these signatures, is a massive crime wave of stolen ballots, misinformed. Did they go out and arrest anyone? They say, oh my God, someone stole a ballot. That's a felony crime. If it was a felony crime, did anyone report the crime? No, they just took away your vote. Peter, when you, if you rob a bank, they don't close your bank account. They put you in prison. We don't have 600,000 fraudulent voters. You don't just throw votes in the garbage. The rule should be you count every vote unless you have real evidence that someone has committed a fraud, and not amateurs saying, oh, those signatures don't look like they match. Like you say, that's for expert graphologists, and they aren't graphologists. What they are is Ornstein bloviating bigots with BlackBerries who say, I know that zip code. That's a black voter. We're not counting that vote. And that's what they're doing. It is a Jim Crow operation. And that's – I saw it with my own eyes in Michigan, by the way, when not Hillary Clinton, but Jill Stein came for a count of uncounted votes in Michigan. I mean, one of the you know, stories in the book is that in Michigan, 75,000 votes were never counted. 75,355 ballots weren't counted in Detroit. Trump supposedly won Michigan by 10,000 votes. If you don't count seven times his margin of ballots uncounted in Detroit. But when they did the count, with eyeball count, it's a marvelous machine. The scanners couldn't read the ballots, but the eyeballs could. The Republicans challenged every single Hillary vote, every single one. They challenged, they said, don't count that, don't count that, don't count that. And interestingly, the Democratic lawyers who are in the rooms at the recount didn't challenge the challenge. When they said, don't count that Hillary vote, the Democratic lawyers just stood there with their arms folded.
Yeah.
But which tells you two things. One, they're going to try to steal your vote, your mail-in vote. Two, the Democrats aren't going to protect you. So what do we do about that? The whole point of how Trump stole 2020 is to tell you how to steal it back. That is, bust the burglary. How not to get your vote taken away from you if you mail it in. Do mail it in. Number one, by the way, Peter, is check your registration. You ain't getting no ballot if you ain't registered.
And there have been significant successful efforts to purge people from the voter rolls. That's one of the big schemes of the interstate cross-check list and the state-level purges, claiming that voters had moved or died or both.
Right. Moved and died. Yeah. Moved on. Well, yeah, actually, the book opens up in Georgia, How Trump Stole 2020, and I'm going to read you the entirety of the first chapter. You know the punchline here. The entirety of the first chapter, which is called The End. I decided to start with the end. Donald Trump won re-election as president on November 7th, 2018, before a single vote, 2 years before a single vote was cast. Because what happened is in November 2018, they they tested a new system of purging, that is erasing voters from the voter rolls in Georgia. They erased 500,000 voters from the voter rolls of Georgia in response to a creepy little Supreme Court decision that came down a couple months before. And they got away with it. Stacey Abrams lost a race that the polls said she had won. She says she has won, but she was cheated out of her election as governor of Georgia because 340,134 voters were illegally removed. Illegally. How do I know that? Because as the investigator on that, by the way, later for Stacey Abrams, but during the election for Salon, we actually went through name by name by name with the top address location experts in America. These are the people who know where you live. They know what you did last Tuesday. And by the way, how do I find them? They're the people who work for Amazon and eBay and American Express and know exactly where you are at all times. They have 240 databases which track you, sorry to say. But the good thing is we could prove that a third of 1 million voters never moved, but they were removed in this whiteout of the voter rolls. And including, if it were random, it wouldn't matter. But it included, for example, on camera, and you'll see her picture in How Trump Stole 2020, Christine Jordan, 92 years old. She was voting at the same voting station for 50 years in Atlanta. I was there when they threw her out, 92-year-old cousin of Martin Luther King. He used to come there after church to have dinner at her house. She's never moved her entire life, nearly a century. But they said, you've left Georgia, get out of here. Well, they could see that she was there, but they took away her vote. So they could take away your vote, but then you could take it back. By the way, one thing to note, I want everyone listening to me, please check your registration. Don't be like Ms. Jordan. She thought, oh, I've been voting in the same voting station 50 years. No problem. Yeah, big problem. And I was there after she was thrown out. Then they threw out Raheem Shabazz. They threw out Jasmine Bakhtiar. You can tell from these names what their color is.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't orangey white. That's what they've taken across the country. You have to understand it's only made possible by an ugly, ugly Supreme Court decision by the GOP 5, you know, the White Citizens Council on the on the court. Mm-hmm. And the GOP 5 created this new way of allowing the states to remove voters. So you have to make sure you are not removed. They've removed, are you ready? 16.7 million people in the last 2 years of record keeping. 16.7 million people purged, erased, flushed, wiped out, losing their citizenship rights. Like that? That's probably not so entertaining, is it? But it's important. You got to know this, man.
So, Greg, you inserted a special section in the book called Emergency Alert related to the move to mail-in balloting for this November's presidential election. And before we get to the negatives, and they are substantial, is voting by mail a way of getting around and kind of defeating some of the most popular Republican voter suppression tactics? Because after all, the ballots that are mailed in are a paper ballot that can be reviewed and audited later. So there are some ways that, and this is what I believe, you know, leads to Trump's endless tweets about it, is he is concerned that if most Americans vote by mail, the efforts at precinct level suppression will be bypassed. And really just, putting fear into people's minds and stoking the idea that the election is rigged for the Democrats, which, of course, we'll get to a little bit. The redshift is very clear in all of these election rigging incidents. But his concern is that too many people will vote by mail and that Republicans will lose.
So he's absolutely correct, our Agent Orange, our president, when he says, if we make it easy for people to vote by mail, no Republican will get elected. Well, yeah, he's correct. He's looking at the demographics. There ain't enough white guys to reelect Donald Trump. So they got to get rid of the non-white, non-guys. And that's what they're very good at. And yes, so number one, mail-in voting, if we do it, make it easy, make it correct, make it fair. Well, in other words, if we have Oregon, the Oregon system rolls across the country, hey, it's going to be a very – you're going to have a huge turnout. Votes will be counted, and you're going to have a very progressive Congress and probably Stacey Abrams in the White House if everyone gets the vote. Now, but here's the reality. It's not – Oregon is not America. And so what we have is a massive blockade on getting you the vote. So what I want to tell you, so is Greg Powell saying don't vote by mail? Not at all. For the number one reason, my friend, I don't want you to die. You don't want to vote and die. You stand in the, it was horrible to see African Americans. And by the way, you notice that in Atlanta, in Lexington, Kentucky, in Milwaukee, the places with the long lines, they were all in African American neighborhoods. You look at those lines. I'm telling you, I have the film. My people are out there. But they are out there for a reason. Not because African Americans like standing in the humid rain for 4 hours in Atlanta. They're standing in the rain for 4 hours. And take a chance of dying from a virus. No, they didn't get their ballots like Jerry Thomas. Like Stacey Abrams, who had to go. So, you know, the other thing she could have done is just stand in line for 4 hours to get a new envelope. And they might not give it to her. So they want to take your vote away. And the first way that you lose your ballot, and I'm going to say, I don't know, if I say it five times, it ain't enough, Peter. Check your registration. Go online to your Secretary of State or to vote.org. I prefer you go to the Secretary of State or your County Board of Elections for a simple reason, is that you can re-register right there if you're missing. Mm-hmm. Every state allows re-registration online, except for South Dakota, where they don't have registration. They don't bother. No one needs it. So check your registration. If you're unregistered, like Mrs. Jordan, like all the people I saw in Atlanta who were shocked to find out that they couldn't vote, don't wait. Don't be shocked. Please check your registration. By the way, Greg Palast, I checked my registration, and it said no such voter here in California. So please check your vote. In 2016, all these burners were all upset. They wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders in Brooklyn, and 125,000 were wiped out off the voter rolls just before the election. If those people had checked, listened to Greg Palast, checked their registration, they would have been able to vote. You know, so you got to check. You're not going to get a ballot if you're not on the registry. And if you are inactive, now, Peter, we should talk. You know, inactive, you're sitting on the couch too much, playing too many video games. No, actually, that's not true. Inactive voters are those who have skipped an election, which you have a right to do as an American.
Yes, you do.
Most Americans skip elections at the midterm. Very few people vote outside of presidential elections. So, but if you've skipped a vote, you are now an inactive voter. And states like Ohio and Georgia say they will not mail you a mail-in ballot if you are on the inactive voter list, unless you make a direct request. So you're going to make a direct request because you don't know what list you're on. I'm trying to save your vote, people. In fact, at the back of How Trump Stole 2020, there is what we call the ballot condom. Protect your vote. And it's the – no, you don't wrap it around the ballot, but you do follow the seven steps of advice, beginning with check your registration.
Now, in the book, you write that eight states, including Wisconsin, Minnesota, and North Carolina, require mail-in voters to have the ballot witnessed by a registered voter. Three states, including Missouri, require the ballot to be notarized. And Alabama requires a notary and two witnesses. And aren't there also many states that won't even issue an absentee ballot unless you can prove that you're going to be out of town or you have a doctor's note?
That's correct. So most states are – about half the states, you have to have an excuse to vote absentee, okay? So you do have – and by the way, this stuff keeps changing. Be very careful. I give you advice at the back of How Trump Stole 2020. But for example, a couple weeks ago, the secretary – the new Democratic Secretary of State of Minnesota said we're waiving the requirements for you to have a witness signature. Well, already a federal judge, a right-wing federal judge, says – I'm not sure you can do that. If your law says you got to have a witness signature, the Secretary of State can't just say no. So again, in Alabama, that crazy business. It's either two witnesses or a notarization of your ballot. It's like a poll tax, but it's also dangerous to find two witnesses or go to a notary public if you can find one.
Mm-hmm.
It literally is going to kill people. So a federal judge says this is insane throughout Alabama's requirement. He's, you know, what other states, you know, 47 states somehow have people voting without affidavits, right? Without a problem. So he threw it out. The Supreme Court put it back. So those who are listening from Minnesota, no, don't go by the rule that the latest thing you read in the paper that you don't need a witness signature. You're insane if you don't get a witness signature. You're insane if you don't follow all the rules, because it will be challenged. And the governor won't be able to save you from a Supreme Court decision that said that says 3 million votes in Minnesota will not be counted because they don't have a witness signature.
And Greg, wasn't there a recent court ruling related to Texas and absentee ballots?
Yeah. So what's happening is it's going back and forth. Some of the lower level judges are making things easier for voters. The problem is that the U.S. Supreme Court, okay, you know, again, they, you know, the guys who've changed their white sheets for black robes. And, you know, I say that facetiously, but, you know, it's pretty close. I don't think many Klansmen would have a problem with this court. that's a way to look at it. I'm not saying they're Klansmen. They just have a Klan agenda. No, and I'm not kidding. And so you have to be careful. I wouldn't go by anything where the rules are loosened. If it says get a witness, get a witness. This is going to not be easy to vote. If it says put a stamp on it, put two stamps on, 100,000 people lost their vote for postage due. Because remember, in some states, you're going to have to include a voter ID. And in Wisconsin, if you're a student, you're going to have to also include not only a photocopy of your ID, student ID, you're going to have to include a copy of some type of letter saying you are enrolled and in good standing. That is, you've paid your tuition and didn't flunk algebra.
Wow.
What does that have to do with voting for president? I mean, either your ID is to prevent impersonation,
right,
and someone stealing your vote. What does that have to do with whether you've paid your tuition? And so what's happened is, in effect, we've had about 182,000 Wisconsin students disenfranchised that way. Here's the problem. If you put in those extra pieces of paper, you've now also are going to create a postage due problem. You better put in that second stamp. So follow the rules at gregpalace.com. I'm going to have up the mail-in rules for every single state. But I still will warn people in big, giant letters. In fact, tattoo this on your cat. The rules keep changing. Follow whatever rules are sent to you to a T. Don't mess around. Do it. I know it's a pain. And don't wait till the day before the election to say, oh, my God, my mail-in ballot didn't arrive. If it hasn't arrived within 3 weeks of the election, you call your local county Board of Elections and get your ballot mailed to you. It's really important. And if all else fails, you walk into that polling station, you do early voting during the week, because I find these places are empty and therefore safe. Do safe voting midweek early so that if there's a problem, you can straighten it out. I want to save your vote. It's, you know, the whole point, again, of how Trump stole 2020 is to steal it back. They can't steal all the votes all the time. It's really important to understand that. Barack Obama, when I was writing for Rolling Stone with Bobby Kennedy, we calculated – I used to teach statistics, unfortunately, in another life. But we calculated that Barack Obama in his first race was cheated out of 5.9 million votes. And we called Obama, just so you know. And he said, yeah, I know all about it. And he was able to give us the details of the 5 million votes that were stolen away from him. But he said, we just overwhelmed it. That's it.
Well, he exceeded the margin of craft. That's the way I put it.
But that's really important to understand. They can't steal all the votes all the time. And I can tell you, in 5.9 million votes were – and when I say stolen, what I mean is 5.9 million ballots were rejected and voters blocked. In other words, they were purged or stopped at the polls. They didn't like their ID, or they made them fill out a provisional ballot and nearly 1 million provisional ballots were never counted, rejected, things like that. So 5 million votes there, 7.8 million votes in 2016. Trump didn't win. He stole it. Okay. But again, by votes being deep sixed. And in 2020, it's going to be more than 7 million votes, but we figure about 160 million votes will be cast. But if they steal 5% of the vote to 10% of the vote, that's all. That's quite a bit, but it's not everything.
We can steal it back. So we've already talked about the vagaries of signature matching. And I agree with your point. You put it in the book. We must outlaw challenges to signatures unless there's a report filed that the ballot has been stolen. But we also saw the most recent glaring example of voter fraud. It was actually election fraud, was the harvesting of these mail-in ballots in the 10th Congressional District in North Carolina. And they actually overturned the result of that election and did a rerun. Which is rare, and even rarer given the politics of North Carolina. But what is to prevent these kinds of harvesting schemes or systems from proliferating in a year when we are expanding voting by mail?
Well, exactly. Ways that people can steal away your vote. So, for example, in the ballot harvesting issue, again, it's officialdom. These are the thieves. You had the Republican candidate for Congress. His operatives went around into black neighborhoods and said, "Oh, we'll take in your ballot for you." And they basically collected ballots from black folk, threw them away. That's what they did in North Carolina. But they got caught because that type of ballot manipulation actually is very, very easy to catch. You get caught every time. Every time, I'm telling you, I've been in this business 20 years, and remember, I was an investigator for the U.S. Justice Department. There's certain crimes where you're going to get nailed. But here's where you don't get nailed. Here's what was worse in North Carolina. You had this violently partisan head of their state board of elections, Kim Strake. And she used Chris Kobach's interstate cross-check system where she claimed, she got on television and claimed that there were 35,000 voters where she had their birthdays, social security numbers, everything proving that they had voted in North Carolina and another state. So they went out and hired an FBI agent, a big shot FBI agent, and they gave him a big $1 million budget and 6 months. And he went through that list of the 35,000 ne'er-do-well double voters. And I said, "Wow, that's a felony crime. How many are in prison?" Zero. How many did you catch? Zero. He says, "They're hard to find." I said, wait. When you're a voter in North Carolina, you give them your name and address. And by the way, your email, your phone number. I went through this. I said, "I have the list." They were shocked. I got the list. They didn't realize that I'd gotten their list of people that they were knocking off, Peter. And I went through the list and I said, "Take a look at the list." And I said, "By the way, there's a couple people right nearby here." I told their little FBI agents, "There's some people who, let's go arrest them right now. Come on. They're illegally registered in two states. Let's go and arrest them. You and me, we got the cameras on. It'll be tremendous." They didn't. I went over to the double voter's house in Georgia. And you know what the double voter's name was? James Brown. James Brown. Now, it turns out he was not the godfather of soul who's departed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy couldn't even moonwalk, okay? Just some old guy, right? But it was a nursing home. It was a nursing home. But believe it or not, because there was a James Brown who was voting in another state. I have a chapter in How Trump Stole 2020 called 568 James Browns, because in Georgia, they literally removed over 500 guys named James Brown because they said, "Oh, there's a James Brown in Detroit. There's a James Brown in Baltimore." They had different middle names. I'm not kidding. Everyone had a different middle name. It's in my book. You can actually see I took about 100 names, just a screenshot. I didn't manipulate by the screen. It's exactly as I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
There's 100 James Browns. You'll see, or Michael Browns. Can't remember which I used.
James.
And not
James.
One
James L. Brown. James Aaron Brown. James E. Brown. James O. A. L. D. Herschel. Middle name Donald, middle name Edward. And as we've discussed in the past, the interstate cross-check list was intentionally lacking detail. so that they could just match the first and last name fields and say, well, that's good enough, bump them off, and, you know, maybe they'll re-register. But this was the intent, even though much more detailed data is available.
Yeah, they didn't want to catch double voters. So, for example, this list was created by Chris Kobach of Kansas. And Chris Kobach of Kansas, Mr. If you can't remember the name, just think KKK. Chris Kobach of Kansas created this list of 7.2 million double voting suspects. 7.2 million. I'm the only reporter. Greg Pals is the only reporter who asked for the list. He said, give me the list. Who are these double voters? Let's go arrest them. Where are these double voters? I asked him, by the way. He, you know, have you arrested any? He arrested one Republican.
Yeah.
He had a vacation home, who, by the way, was not voting illegally. There's certain circumstances, like in local elections, if you have two homes, you can vote. But it doesn't matter. I mean, basically, they're targeting 7.2 million people. Now, if it was Republicans with vacation homes that were losing their vote, well, I'm sure the system would have stopped immediately. But that's not who they're blocking from voting. Overwhelmingly, it's people named James Brown, Jose Garcia, David Kim. Are you getting the picture? Are you figuring out the color? 85 of the 100 most common last names in America are minority names, like Garcia, Rodriguez, Black, Brown, Johnson, Jackson, etc. In fact, this purge system devastated the Asian American voting community. I was in Atlanta and with 10,000 Koreans vote and a Mr. Park, as they were telling me, there's about four last names in Korea, and, you know, Kim Park Ho and a couple of others. And they said, this is devastating to us. And when they complained, so they were registering, they registered voters. There was a group called 10,000 Koreans Vote. So you have to, if you get 10,000 Koreans are going to vote, you have to have 10,000 Korean Americans register. So they registered these voters, about 4,000. They sent them to Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, not yet governor. Well, they didn't look to Brian Kemp like his kind of voters. They're 75% Democrats, Asian American voters. Didn't look as his, so somehow, miraculously, those 4,000 Asian American voters, known as Democrats, were not entered onto the voter rolls. So the Korean American organization called up Brian Kemp's office and said, Brian Kemp, where are our voters? And they said, oh, there are no such voters. You never sent in any registration. They said, oh, yes, we did. We have the photocopies. And he said, you got the photocopies? We'll be right over. And they were. They kicked in the doors, took the machines, threatened everyone with arrest for ballot tampering.
Yeah. And Greg, weren't there 45,000 people who registered as part of the Abrams campaign whose names were never added to the registration rolls?
Yes, and by the way, remember, I was investigating in Georgia for Rolling Stone and Al Jazeera for past seven years. This is not something that I just picked up. Those names were submitted by Stacey Abrams' organization at the time. And almost all young voters of color, like college students, 45,000 names about. They didn't enter them in time for the 2014 election. By the time she ran for governor in 2018, they still hadn't entered their names on the voter rolls. And our wonderful right-wing courts said, well, they didn't have to enter those names because that would require hiring clerks, and we can't tell them to hire clerks to put names on. So there it is. And that's how Brian Kemp became governor. But – it goes. The important thing is that these methods were taken for a test drive in Georgia, the removal of all the James Browns, the blockade of Asian American registrations, the blockade of students of student registration. My daughter was a student in Savannah, Georgia, and she tried everything except taking hostages. She could not get registered in Georgia, and even the Democratic Party there said, "You're a student here in Georgia. They're never going to let you vote. Just forget about it." That's how, I mean, they literally just made sure that students don't vote. And, you know, so you have all these problems, but we can overcome them. Stacey Abrams almost pulled it off, and she will. And I'm, you know, I mean, you have to understand they can't steal all the votes all the time. And but we're seeing some ugly stuff in Wisconsin and Michigan, Ohio and other states that they can't win without the trickery. And that's what I'm exposing. And that's why you see me running around with my fedora, confronting these guys, investigating these guys, suing them. I just got off the phone with our lawyers for the Palace Investigative Fund. Remember that I'm just the hat on camera, or I'm the guy that writes the books and talks on the radio, but I have 15 people working on this stuff. We have experts and lawyers and statisticians and you name it. And I got to tell you that we can, you know, we're uncovering this stuff so you don't have to lose your vote. You don't have to.
Greg, one of the other things, as I recall from the Georgia primary, was that they rolled out a whole new system of voting machines. And the people, and of course, they were understaffed at the reduced number of polling places that were open. And these staff people had not been trained on the new machines. And I want to couple your comments on that with the issue related to ballot images, because people who vote on a machine, there is an option for the election officials to record what's called a ballot image of each voter's final ballot. And that is something that can be looked at forensically in an audit, or if there are any issues of miscount or fraud. And you've discovered that in most jurisdictions, they turn that off. And John Roberts Brakey, an activist from Phoenix who I've known for a long time, has been crisscrossing the country. He's sending up flares from Michigan right now about trying to force the election officials to capture those ballot images.
Well, I got to tell you, I was in Columbus, Ohio, which was the swing state back in 12, and Barack Obama pulled that out. And then I went to, in 16, and yes, I went into a courtroom with the great attorney, voting rights attorney Bob Fetrakis, and Fetrakis was saying was trying to get a court order from a judge saying, make them turn on the ballot imaging. Let me explain to people what this is. We vote on these electronic machines. And there's no paper record, but the new machines, all basically every one of them that are in business right now, almost everyone, you can turn on what's called ballot imaging and ballot numbering and anti-hacking software. But you literally have to say, I want the anti-hacking software on. It detects any attempt to mess with the software in the machine or with the machine. So in Ohio, they literally turned off the anti-hacking software. Then they turned off the ballot numbering and imaging. So this is like an electronic print, and you see the electronic print. It's like a PDF. It's locked into place. It can't be changed. It's numbered. It's ordered. It's timestamped. So it's a way that gets you pretty close to paper ballot verification. Pretty cool. So, hey, you don't have to worry anymore about voting machines. But now, very uncool, they've turned off the protection. They turned off the anti-hacking software. They turned off in Ohio the ballot imaging so recounts would be impossible. And the judge is saying, oh, we can't force these counties to go through this whole expensive process of resetting their machines. It is when you turn on the machine, it says, do you want anti-hacking software? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you want ballot imaging and numbering? Yes.
Yeah, it's too great a burden. We can see that, Greg. You can't force them to do that.
Well, here's the question I have in my chapter, The Amnesia Machines. I asked a question. I said, I don't know if they're messing with your ballot in the machine. But what I want to know as an old investigator, as an old detective, is if you're not committing a crime, why are you covering it up? That's the danger. And what are they doing? Why aren't they turning on these protections? So we have a big problem there. But, you know, also, again, when you're mailing in your vote, you got to make sure even then it does go into a machine. It goes into in most states like Michigan, it will go – they're going to open your ballot and stick it through a scanning machine. This is where the machines break down. As I said, in Detroit, you had 87 scanning machines break down. As a result, 75,000 votes were never counted in the state that Trump – in Detroit.
Right.
In the state that Trump supposedly won by 10,000 votes. That will include, they're going to take your absentee ballot and run it through those machines. You use a red pen, a pencil, crayon. You put a check mark instead of filling in a bubble, because these are machines that generally read bubbles. But you put a check mark. Sorry, Charlie, you've just not only lost that vote, but in most states, you'll lose your entire ballot. And you've folded it wrong. You put it in the wrong envelope. You made an extra mark and erased it. You misvoted, and so you crossed it out and wrote in something else. You just threw away your ballot, because there's going to be the Trumpster challenge army, the vigilantes. Everyone's talking about the 50,000 vigilantes that Trump is putting together. They're not going to intimidate voters. It's not a voter intimidation force. If it is, it's a joke. It's not going to work. What it will work is that those people are being trained to challenge ballots one after the other. That's what they're going to do. It's a 50,000 strong challenge army. If each of those people challenges, 10 votes, that's 500,000 votes in key states that will be thrown in the garbage unless someone challenges the challengers.
And Greg, one of the other issues that John Brakey has fought is that in the jurisdictions where they actually turn on that software button that says capture ballot image,
yes,
they are destroyed by the voting officials before the, I believe it's 18 months, or it varies, but there are statutory regulations about how long ballots must be preserved, but ballot images are often destroyed before they could ever be examined.
That's right. That's the problem. It's like, why are you, if you're not committing the crime, why are you covering it up? Why are you destroying the ballots? Why are you erasing ballots? What does it mean? It's just what? It's a couple megabytes in some computer. It's a gigabyte in some computer somewhere that you keep. What's the problem? Why don't they want the ballots to actually be seen and read and checked? It is. And yeah, so but I want to emphasize again to people, we can do many things to challenge the challenge. One of the things is when you cast that vote, show up and participate in the count. We need poll watchers. We need poll workers. And by the young people listening, please sign up to be a poll worker. One of the reasons we've had this problem of the collapse of the number of polling stations in big cities is that almost all poll workers, I mean, it's overwhelmingly, according to federal statistics, are over the age of 60. So they're at risk. We can't have the usual people behind that desk. They will die, okay? Many will. We can't have 10,000 people die because they were poll workers. So if you're young and therefore pretty, pretty resistant to virus, we need you. Lexington, Kentucky collapsed to one voting station, the biggest city in Kentucky. And again, but it's an African-American city. Second, Milwaukee went from 180 voting stations to 5. Milwaukee is the most African-American concentration of any city in America. So notice the number of voting stations is collapsing. So you're going to have to vote by mail. You're going to have to try to figure out otherwise how to vote early. Whatever the rules are, follow the rules. Don't mess with them. It says witness, get a witness. Make sure that witness is a registered voter. Oh, well, in Wisconsin, you don't have to be a registered voter. You have to be a citizen. Well, how do you prove someone's a citizen, Peter? Well, if they're on the voter rolls, then they're a citizen because only citizens vote. So be careful. They're looking out to disqualify your ballot, but you should be at the count. And when your ballot is open, say no. Don't let them challenge your ballot. Challenge the challenge.
Greg, in the book, you talk about how the pollsters have been, for whatever reasons, they have submitted to pressure. And exit polls, which are the most accurate form of polling known to humans, have been massaged now to the point where unless you get that initial snapshot of an exit poll that has been released before there is even a final preliminary count, the pollsters massage those numbers to match the official count and render them meaningless. But exit polls did show substantial variations, shall we say, from the estimated to, count of those who were polled as they left a polling place and official tallies as they were produced. And as you comment on this, I'd also just like to ask you, was there manipulation in the Democratic primary that harmed Bernie Sanders? Because I saw accounts of at least 8 states where exit polls showed significant, like double-digit variations between what the exit poll showed Sanders getting and what the official tally ended up as.
Well, I want to go over exit polls for the Sanders primary, Sanders-Biden primaries, and also Trump and Hillary. So let's begin with Sanders, all right? Okay. I have a chapter called California Reman. And while it's very easy to vote in California in the general election, it's horrifically difficult to vote in the primaries. Why? We have a one-party state. It's a Democratic Party. So all of the purging and votes, vote rustling, all the trickery is Democrats ripping each other up because there's no Republicans here. So, for example, in California Reman chapter, I calculate pretty darn accurately with the top voting statistician in California that Bernie was shafted out of, ready for this, 553,000 votes in this past March primary. 553,000 votes. Remember, in California, you're talking about 8 million voters, but at least. But it's still losing 500,000 votes. That may have been 50 delegates at least. But the important thing, how did they pull it off? They sent out 3.7 – the Democratic Secretary of State, who's also the Biden promoter, and in 16 he was running the Hillary campaign while he's running the election. He was the Brian Kemp of California.
Yeah.
He sent out
Alex Padilla.
Alex Padilla. And he sent out 3.7 million ballots to independent voters who have the right to vote in the Democratic primary. 80% wanted to vote in the Democratic primary. But he sent them independent ballots, which, of course, have no presidential candidate on them. Almost 4 million people got ballots without the presidential candidate. Then you have to go through a whole rigmarole to turn them back in. Now, why would he do that to these so-called – these independent voters? Why wouldn't he just do like they do in Colorado, where every voter, independent voter, every independent voter is mailed a ballots for both parties and you get to choose? The reason is that the independent voters vote 2-1 Sanders. They were overwhelmingly for Sanders, and especially in the Hispanic community where many people registered independent, but, you know, T.O. Bernie was their man. So they stole it from Bernie in 16. They stole it in 20. In 20, he won, but they crushed down his number of delegates. But, okay, that's the Democratic primary. Now we move to the big money, to the big game hunt. In November of 2016, supposedly Hillary Clinton lost Michigan by 10,000 votes, Wisconsin by 22,000, and
Pennsylvania,
30,000 in Pennsylvania, and a little less. And I can tell you, because Pennsylvania is opaque, they had those voting machines with no records, no backup, no nothing. We don't know what the hell happened in Michigan. We do know this when you talk about exit polls. Hillary Clinton crushed Donald Trump in Wisconsin, crushed Donald Trump in Michigan, and looks like she won. According to the exit polls, she did very well, beat Trump by by a substantial margin in Pennsylvania. So what's going on here? How could the exit polls be wrong? Understand this, like I say in the book, I even show you a picture of the State Department pamphlet, which says that we measure the honesty of elections abroad by comparing the official results to the exit polls. So by the state U.S. government's own standard, the 2016 election was stolen because the exit polls show convincingly, absolutely, that Hillary won Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and several other states that supposedly officially went to Trump. Now, but one thing you mentioned was this conformance. You have this new evil in America. So we ignore our own standard. When you say that the exit polls don't match the final number, the official numbers, that means that someone has been shafted out of their vote. And it's real simple. How does this happen? If you walk out of a polling station, you can tell the pollster whether you voted, but you have no idea if your vote counted. 5.8 million ballots, and this is official, 5.8 million ballots were rejected in 2016. 5.8 million ballots were rejected, overwhelmingly voters of color. In fact, the U.S. Civil Rights Commission did a study and found out that the chance your ballot will be disqualified under crazy technical grounds like a hanging chad is 900% higher if you're black than if you're white. So in other words, so Hillary Clinton's election is in that rejection pile. And that's what the exit polls picked up, because people said, this is who I voted for, but those votes weren't recorded.
Well, and this year, because there will be substantially more voting by mail, exit polls will be very difficult to conduct and likely have little validity. And we got to prepare people that election night is not going to likely provide a result if it is anywhere close. And, you know, there will be a count of absentee ballots that were received up to and including Election Day. But, for example, in California, you are permitted to mail your ballot on Election Day, which delays the receipt and therefore the counting of those ballots. So, number one, exit polls won't have much relevance. And number two, we should not expect any kind of a conclusion on election night.
No. In fact, we may not have a conclusion in 2020. In fact, I would doubt it. Not one we'd like. Here's my concern. When I saw the mass purging, which leads to people not getting their ballot, and you saw those lines, that was a test run. That wasn't a mistake that they made, and they're going to correct it. That was a test run of a process. Those lines are going to be 8 hours long, and there's going to be violence, and people are going to mail in their ballots, and they're going to be stuck in the post office. You're going to see millions of ballots not stuck in the post office, ballots mangled in the post office, ballots not delivered to people. Again, 1 in 10. If keep this in mind, if we continue at the pace we have of votes not counting, who are mailed in, we have a 22% loss, and we have 80 million voters by mail, which I expect. That's 17 million ballots are going to be thrown away. 17 million ballots. Trump won by 70,000 votes in the Electoral College states, and most of the ballots will be thrown out in those swing states. That's the history. That's the guarantee. I'm deeply, deeply worried about this, and you're going to see mass challenges by Trump's vigilante force. You're going to see things like Roger Stone, if you remember, he's back out. He's on the loose.
Yeah.
Believe me, he's going to do his Gucci Riot Redux. Now, some people, if you're old enough, back in 2000, George Bush lost Florida and the presidency if you counted all the ballots. So they didn't count all the ballots, and Bush was elected by 537 votes. That's it. Made him president. Now, of course, in the book, I talk about 58,000 black men removed from the voter rolls, because they were ex-cons. Their only crime was voting while black. That was a lie. But even with the 58,000 black men blocked from voting, Bush still would have lost if you'd have counted the ballots that they reject, that the machines couldn't count, and they were counting by eyeball. So what did Roger Stone and his brown shirt force do? They literally rioted inside the Miami-Dade County offices while they were trying to count the ballots. It was so dangerous. They were smashing the windows and everything else that the vote people left because they said it was just too dangerous. You didn't count the uncounted ballots in Miami, of which there were 178,000 uncounted ballots. 178,000 uncounted ballots in Florida in 2020. That's from the Elections Assistance Commission. That's the federal number. Okay.
And back in 2000, there was a guy named John Roberts who was part of that Gucci mob, as you call it, who descended to stop votes from being counted in Florida. And he's the same guy who double votes now. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's the same guy who presides over the Supreme Court.
Yep. And that's what I'm afraid of, is that you have ballot rustlers who now – that by the way, that's what makes vote theft such a wonderful crime, because you steal the police force. Right? Who's going to protect us? John Roberts from vote thieves? He's a vote thief, and he's chief justice. And then you have the chief injustice, Mr. Barr, our attorney general,
mm-hmm.
who is violently, violently opposed to voting rights. He argued for requiring people in Alabama to have a notarize their ballots in order to mail in their vote. So this is so what happens is you steal the voting police. So the Civil Rights Division, the Justice Department, which is supposed to be on the side of the voter, has actually been holding hands and going to courtrooms and supporting every vote suppression technique that the GOP can dream up. Mm-hmm. That now, instead of it being challenged by the Justice Department, they are holding hands with the Justice Department, walking into the courtroom, wiping out the votes of non-white voters and young people. Those are their targets. So mm-hmm. I'm really worried that we're going to have the Gucci riots all over America, where they're going to try to stop block vote counts. We're going to have a mail-in meltdown disaster. We're going to have millions of votes being challenged by 50,000 vigilantes. And there's a very good chance that many states will simply say it's too much of a cluster F, and therefore we will not certify the vote. And so if the Republican legislatures do not certify votes in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Florida, three states where you have right-wing legislatures, but Biden's expected to win, if those legislatures don't certify the vote, no one gets 270 votes in the Electoral College. It then goes to the House of Representatives, and then it's over, baby, because every state gets a single vote. Wyoming, California, one vote.
Really? A vote in the House of Representatives in a deadlocked Electoral College leads to the House voting with one vote per state? I've never heard that detail.
Because no one talks about the 12th Amendment, and that's what's going on.
Holy shit.
We've had a couple of elections. I mean, we had where it's gone to the House and it's been ugly. We had the Tilden Hayes race. I know Americans, this is talk about to what Americans is trivia, but it changed the face of America. Tilden, the Democrat, won both the Electoral College and the popular vote. But but Republicans disputed one electoral vote. So he was one short of a majority, and therefore went to the House. And the guy who lost the popular vote and the Electoral College won. And that was, by the way, the result was that Reconstruction ended. And the Ku Klux Klan took over the South, and that was the rise of Jim Crow. So literally, Jim Crow is a result of a stolen election.
Wow. One more cite from your book. It's a single statement. Vote suppression is simply class war by other means. And I want people to – I'm going to say it again because I think people really need to let that settle in. Vote suppression is simply class war by other means. And it has been extremely effective. And you've given us a great warning here, Greg. I really appreciate your honesty. The other factor in the book, and we've discussed this before, but you reject the notion that Russia meddled in any significant way in the 2016 election. And I share that total skepticism that you offer, and I'm glad you had the courage to put it in print, because way too many people are compromised by the Russiagate narrative and this belief that we're not able to divide ourselves and game our own elections without interference from Vladimir Putin. So,
that's the chapter, Russian to Judgment. What I was concerned with is, you know, there's no question, because I read I'm not going to lie and say I read the entire 700-page Mueller report, but I read all the executive summaries in it, about 100 pages. And there's no question that Russians, especially Russian oligarchs, bought Facebook ads, were hoping to manipulate the election. But they were like – it was like – you have to understand, it was like throwing spitballs at a tank. Hillary Clinton spent $2 billion in advertising. So what's like the 350,000? There's different numbers that fly around, but it's a peanut. It's a peanut, you know, and the elephant ate the peanut. And you have to understand, I was asked on MSNBC, actually, are you afraid that the Republicans will steal the vote in Ohio? That was in 16. That the Russians will steal the vote in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio is controlled by rabid, partisan, vicious, Jim Crow wielding Republicans. They don't need any help from some pimply kid in his mommy's bedroom in Russia. You don't have to. The Republicans of Ohio don't need anyone to train them in how to steal a vote. But that was the wrong answer, because they want to say that only some dark foreign power would ever steal elections. Americans never steal elections, right?
And but, you're banned for life from MSDNC, right?
Well, not completely, but you know, it's not the answer that they want to hear.
Yeah,
they want to hear nothing but hooray for the. You know, that you can never say, as Hillary Clinton say, no one's ever challenged a presidential election. I guess she was in a coma in 2000 when Gore did go to the Supreme Court to challenge the election in Florida. He did file a lawsuit. The other is and of course, I just told you about Tilden Hayes. About a third of the elections in the United States have been hotly and sometimes violently disputed. So, I mean, it's not true. That this is a new thing. The Democratic Party's come up with this new thing that you can't challenge an election. And this is new. This new in Democratic Party, by the way. But it's very dangerous, because if you don't call out the theft, you will never stop it. Now, when I say the Democratic Party, I want to be very careful. You know, as I say in the book, Stacey Abrams actually hired my expert team. She said, specifically citing my investigation, that she lost the governorship because of voters wiped off the voter rolls, like Christine Jordan. She cited my work. But so what I'm telling you, but of course she is African American. And so what I want to tell you, I don't have a problem with the Democratic Party and its silence. The problem is the white congressional caucus in the Democratic Party.
I've been chastised by many members of Congress saying, don't talk about election irregularities because it'll scare people away from voting. And it's like, what? I mean, they know what's going on, dude. And you think that by just keeping it hushed up, that it will let people go through the charade of, you know, the elections process? It's stunning how much denial there is among Democrats.
I do hear. That's the crazy ass line that. We're going to scare people away from voting because they'll just think their vote is stolen. I keep telling people no, because they can't steal all the votes all the time. But let's put it this way. The Democrats have been silent. I have a chapter called Silence of the Democratic Lambs. How's that been working out? Who's president? Now, they didn't say a word. They didn't raise a peep about Donald Trump swiping the election, except the Russian interference.
Right.
But they didn't talk about the 75,000 votes not counted in Detroit. And when I say they, I mean the white Democrats. A black Democrat did. The city clerk of Detroit screamed bloody murder about the uncounted votes and the broken machines. And by the way, she screamed bloody murder before the election that the machines are broken. But the Republican state, which controlled the city because it was in bankruptcy,
right.
So they controlled the city, say you're not getting money for new machines. Where was the Democratic Party in that? The white Democratic Party. I said the black Democratic Party, there's no issue. And I find that, and Stacey Abrams also proved something else, this whole thing that people won't vote if you tell them their vote's being stolen. She had been shouting from the rooftops that this election is being stolen. The result was the biggest turnout in a non-presidential year for any election in Georgia's history. So – in particular in the black community. So they were, and you'd see these signs, this precinct 100% voted. So what I'm telling you is that the Democratic leadership that says, don't mention the car theft. I mean, are you really telling me that people, just because cars are stolen and they are stolen, that don't tell anyone that cars get stolen. Don't, so you won't lock the doors because you think cars are never stolen. So people will never drive again because they hear cars are stolen. No, what people say is, no, I just lock my door and take the key. How about that? Why don't we lock the door and take the key so they can't steal the vote? That should be the response, not to say, don't tell anyone. Because don't tell anyone has resulted in a bloviating bigot in the White House. So, you know, so far the Democratic silence has not worked.
Greg Palast, I want to thank you for joining us today and for that authentic chopper sound effect in the background. We know you're in Los Angeles.
Well, it's occupied territory.
Get the book and read it. Audiobook available too, Greg?
It will be soon, How Trump Stole 2020.
With cartoons, comics, we call them, by Greg, by Ted Rall, sorry. And Ted did a great job of serving up some funny images with some hard-hitting data, and also a few good slams at some of the characters who populate the crime syndicate that rigs America's elections. Greg Palast, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Peter, you're the best.
Thanks for listening to this in-depth interview with Greg Palast. Send your comments to Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.